everyone. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Sharon Butler, a painter and publisher of the art blogazine Two Coats of Paint, and this is a Two Coats of Paint conversation. This past week, Two Coats was engaged in the final days of the year-end fundraising campaign, and I want to thank all the readers and listeners for their generous and tax-deductible contributions. We also published several pieces. David Carrier wrote about Spencer Finch's hanging glass installation at the Hall Art Foundation in Chelsea. David called it a dramatic visual essay on light, and the images looked really good, but I didn't see it. I think it's still up though, so that's good. We also had a piece by Jenny Zoe Casey on Southern Painting Show at Susan Inglet that featured Jody Hayes and Micho Miko. And finally, Jonathan Stevenson contributed a piece on Heidi Hahn's show at Nathalie Karg. He loved the show and said Hahn's large-scale figurative paintings, each featuring a solitary woman, present a geometry of enveloping arcs and regimenting angles, elusive as well as elusive. So go have a look at some of the new posts at www.twocoatspaint.com. And this week, I hope to get the gallery guides up, so that should be good. All right, today we've got Peter Dudek is our host, and he'll be talking about the exhibitions we didn't see this year. In addition to being an artist and former Two Coats of Paint resident, Peter is a longtime adjunct faculty member at Hunter and SVA, and co-director and creative organizer at Bascom Lodge, an historic hotel on the top of Mount Greylock in Massachusetts. His work was recently featured in MOD, an exhibition at Platform Project Space. Hi, Peter.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. When you suggested this topic for a conversation, I was surprised. I usually do the top 10 shows that I like best, but I was led to believe you're supposed to see work and then discuss it. I want to know how you came up with the idea for this.
Well, we did a couple of other clubhouses on things we never did. One was galleries I've never been to, and that was a pretty interesting, fun talk. And then the second one was art fairs I've never been to. You know, and so I was thinking, well, there's always shows we don't see. There's so many shows to see and whatnot. So let's talk about some shows we never saw, and of course there was, you know. Hyperallergic and others came out with lists of shows that were the best that apparently they saw them, but there were some good shows I did not see. So I thought, well, let's kick that around a little bit. What did we not see? Maybe we regret not seeing them. Maybe we're happy we didn't see them. That sort of thing.
I suppose there are different reasons on why you don't see shows. I mean, when I started off by looking at the lists, you know, the Hyperallergic and the Art Forum. And had seen shockingly few of the shows. You know, Hyperallergics was 50 long. And I think, you know, I had seen Faith Ringgold and a few others on there that I had seen, but most of them I hadn't seen. And then the Art Forum, it was the same, and I realized it's probably because I'm kind of on the painting beat. And then when I went and looked at the Two Coats of Paint gallery guides, I could only go back to November, because it started to feel a little bit like a self-flagellation. I was just so angry at myself for not seeing so many of the shows that I had wanted to see. I couldn't go back any further.
Yeah, and I broke down my top 10 into different categories, and that was the way I could approach or rationalize, anyways, why I didn't see certain shows. You know.
All right, so let's hear it. What have you got?
Okay, here's my list of 10 I did not see, and broke it down into categories. The first category is, I wasn't interested in seeing this show, and it was the Whitney Biennial. I often do see the Whitney Biennial, but it's a show I love to hate, you know. I remember one year I was going through the show, about halfway through it, I was telling people in the exhibition there, wow, this is the best biennial I think I've ever seen. But then by the end of the show, I thought, boy, this show sucked, you know.
So, which year was that?
That was back in the 90s, I believe. It was the late 90s. I forget what show it was. But usually, you know, they got some hit and miss in there. But it's I never regret not seeing it, although I see most of them.
Well, you know, the thing with those shows is, and I almost put on Documenta and Manifesta on my list, but the thing about those big shows is, you know, there's so much there. It's almost like you could go to one of those and that would be enough shows for the year. You know, that would be enough art for you to ruminate over for a year.
Yeah. And we all see like 200 shows a year. You know, it's like crazy. We still miss hundreds of shows, you know. So the next one is shows that just slipped by me. I had time to see it, but I didn't. And that was the Richard Poussette Dart Show at Pace.
Oh, so good. So good.
Yeah. I was really curious to see his sculptures, you know. The paintings, too, because that was his juicy period, you know, the 1950s, you know. But I was curious about the wire sculptures.
The thing about the show that was so great, not to make you feel bad, but the thing that was so great was it was curated by his daughter, Joanna Poussette Dart, who is also an artist, a painter.
Right.
And so it was curated from an artist's point of view. And there isn't an artist I know who went to see that show and didn't come away saying, oh, man, I got to get back to the studio. Because there was something about the selection of the work, you know, the rigor of his dedication. You know, there were tons of sketchbooks and just so much about the process that was just so inspiring to see.
Right, yeah, no, it looked at it. I went on the website and there was a little discussion. Joanna was part of the discussion, as well as Christopher Wool, who apparently studied with Poussette Dart and made his own wire sculptures, you know.
I didn't realize he taught.
Apparently, at least that's what Wool said in the conversation. Huh. And when I was on the Pace website, there was this other show there by Torquasi Dyson, if that's mm-hmm. how you pronounce the name. That seemed interesting because there were these dark architectural sculptural forms that looked like might be interactive. You could enter them, perhaps. They also looked like, you know, the movie Cabinet of Dr. Calgary. It was like some of those, as if fragments of that set for that film were just painted all black. You know, it had kind of a dynamic quality to it.
You know, she's on my list as well, that show. And, you know, I was familiar with her work, but it used to be these, you know, wall drawings, very dark charcoal wall drawings. And I'm really intrigued by the move to three-dimensional form in that show.
It was on at the same time. In November, December was a hard month for me to see shows with the end of the semester and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, she talked about them as these architectural spaces and stuff. So
it's right up your alley.
Yeah. Those are shows that slipped me by. And the next category is a show I really didn't want to miss, which was a Taube Auerbach exhibit up at the Clark Art Institute in Williamstown, Massachusetts. And I'm up there in the summer quite a bit, you know. And somehow that just slipped me by, and that one I really wanted. I don't know if you know her work, but I really love her work. And it was a show called Meander, and it was a two-person, Yuji Agamatsu. Was also in that show. And it was just quirky little work. And I wish I had seen that. It was almost like a piece from one part of her work, another piece from a different part. Because she does very different kinds of work. You know, she mm-hmm. does calligraphy and all sorts of investigations of pattern. She does paintings where she drags these 3D printed objects across the wet surface and creates different patterns. And she's really gotten into this pattern thing. The new piece that was in the show I wanted to see was composed of glass beads that were threaded and had something to do with fractals and all sorts of different theories of form. Looked like a little jewel-like kind of thing. But she does a lot of editions that are open and inexpensive. You could collect her work very easily.
Okay.
And next, conflicted about not seeing. Like, yeah, I got two shows on the conflicted thing. Like, I almost went to see it, and then I thought, do I need to see it? I kind of would like to see it. And one was the Joan Mitchell show in Baltimore, which I'm sure was a fantastic show, but I just didn't make it there. And the other one was the Gustin show in Boston, which I'm sure was a fantastic show also, but I partly wanted to see it there. I'm going to see it at its next stop, which I think is in D.C. But the one in Boston, they had this thing where they created an exit ramp as you got to the so-called more controversial pieces. And I really wanted to see how they handled the so-called controversy and the layout of that show.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You know, the Joan Mitchell show, I tried to go to the Joan Mitchell show. Did I tell you this story?
No.
I had made a reservation at a little hotel down there to stay over. And the day that we were going to leave town, you know, we live in Queens, and so you had to go down the BQE and then across Manhattan and so forth, or through Staten Island. Anyway, it was the five borough bike race that day. And so by the time we got to Baltimore, we missed the show. It had already closed.
Wow.
Yeah, so disappointing.
Yeah.
So that's on my list of shows I would have seen as well.
Right.
But I was, it's a whole new category.
Yeah.
I was unable to see it.
Yeah. Yeah, that happened to be once when I went to an out-of-town show. I figured what the problem was. It might have been transit also. Next category is, did I even know about this show? I think I did.
You know, I had this experience looking at the hyperallergic and the art forum lists. Go ahead.
Yeah. The Ray Johnson photographs at the Morgan Library. Did you know about that show?
I didn't until I was preparing for this, and I thought, Ray Johnson photographs, that would have been great.
Right. I think I knew about it. But I didn't see it. And, of course, I went on the websites for all these shows, and you know, except for the Whitney Biennial, they all looked fantastic.
Right, but you know, I was also looking at the Morgan website, another show there were two shows. There was the sailing show. It was like sailing ships. Mm-hmm. Wait a minute, I have the name of it here. And, you know, I grew up in a sailing community and always loved sea paintings. You know, I was right near the Mystic Seaport. Oh, here it is. Dawn Till Dusk, Studies of Light in Marine Sketches was also at the Morgan Library that I would have liked to have seen. I think that the Morgan Library deserves more attention. They seem to have good shows.
They do. I often go there somewhat by accident. You know, I'll be walking by the neighborhood. It's almost like you're going to see galleries and you accidentally walk into one. That happens with the Morgan. I'll find myself in an area and I'll just pop in and I'll see a show there. And often it'll be about something that wasn't at the top of my list, or perhaps I didn't even know. And I just kind of casually took it in. That's always a nice thing. It's kind of nice to see out of the way places, but if you can call it an out of the way place, it's what, Madison 35th Street. But it's nice to like pop into these places that, you know, it's not the Modern, it's not the Guggenheim, you know, whatever, but it's a nice little place.
Right.
The final section of shows I did not see are ones that I missed, but they're still up. I can still see it, and at the top of the list is 52 Artists, A Feminist Milestone at the Aldrich Museum.
There you go. It's on my list, too.
It's up for just another 7 days or so. Next Sunday, it ends. So this weekend, I definitely have to get over there and see that show.
I like the Aldrich.
Yeah.
I like the size of it.
Right. Yeah, it's good size. I'm always happy when I get a chance to see the stuff there. And it'd be interesting to see the show. I think it's 26 artists from the original show that Lucy Lepard put together, and then 26 more recent artists, and so we'll see what that combination adds up to.
So you're going to go?
I'm going.
Good. Yeah.
And Jack Whitten at Dia Beacon. I don't think I've been to Dia since COVID, and it'd be good to go there. And this is the first time they've exhibited his so-called Greek alphabet paintings, and from a period of between 75 and 1978. And so that'll be good to see. You know, Jack is, I think he was always considered a painter's painter. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. I would say that.
Yeah. And he, you know, he always showed to some degree, but then, you know, towards the end of his life, he like connected with what was Werner. I forget which big gallery he connected with. And he started to see a lot more of his stuff. So it'll be interesting to see that. And then in Boston at the MFA is Frank Bowling. And I haven't been to Boston in a while. And it might be a good idea to go there during this show. And I haven't been to the MFA very often. And see Bowling's paintings and the building and hang out for a couple of days in Boston would be good.
All right. Can I add a few more, Peter?
Yeah, go ahead. List? That's my list.
All right. I have other things on the list. And I have to say that this is a little bit like confession. And I feel like if I don't put everyone's show on that I didn't see, that I'll be in more trouble than not having gone to the show in the first place.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
All right, there's two places that I didn't go in 2022, and I wanted to put those out right away. Postmasters got a new gallery at 484 Broome Street. I still have not been there, so there's that. I also have not gone out to the Hamptons.
That's something that's also on my list. I can't believe the shows I've missed that have been out there. It is true.
I really missed shows at Duck Creek Art Center. It's a new art center out there.
Right.
That, I mean, I know Eric Brown had a show out there, and I missed that. So. Well.
Yeah, that's a whole weekend or more to visit a bunch of places. You know, the Parrish Art Museum and the Dia place out there and Pollock Krasner, et cetera, et cetera, and the galleries.
Yeah. One of the shows that I really wanted to see was Astrid Dick and Erica Rainey at Michael David in Bushwick. And it was a show where Erica invited Astrid to show work, and I wasn't at all familiar with Astrid's work. And every time somebody would post one on Instagram, I would say, I have to go see that show. And I'm just not in Bushwick that much anymore. And I just never got over there. So I'm sorry that I never got to see that. And also, Erica's paintings look fantastic.
I don't know them, but yeah, I don't get to Bushwick very much either, not these days.
Well, she makes abstract paintings, and she used to show at, I want to say, Freight and Volume, and now she's moved to Klaus in Tribeca. So I'm looking forward to her seeing more of her new work. Mm-hmm. All right. You probably got a million emails for this, too. It was singing in unison in Industry City and other venues around town. It was a show curated by the Brooklyn Rail, Fong, and the, you know, the whole Brooklyn Rail crew. And everybody had work in it, and it was at Miguel Abreu, it was at just different venues around town, and I kept thinking, I have to go see that, and I never got to any of them.
Same here.
I think I was overwhelmed by the amount of work and the number of venues. It was more than I could contemplate, I guess. I don't know. Mm. All right. Here's one. It falls in the category of old friends. Eric Aho at D.C. Moore. He's someone I went to Mass Art with back in the day, and he's been showing at D.C. Moore for a long time. He's a landscape painter, and I missed his show, mostly because it was at the same time that my show was up, and so I had numerous, activities I had to do in relationship to that. So I'm sorry I missed that. And I've been following along with his work for, 20 years. So I'm sorry to have missed that.
That's a good category, old friend show that you missed. There was a group show at Platform, Project Space, that I missed. Jimbo Blatchley was in, an old friend. It looked like a very good show.
You're right. It came down. That's right. It came down right before the holidays.
Yeah.
That was a good show. It was curated by Kate Teal.
Right.
And Jimbo was in it, and it was a good show. I also have James Sienna.
I saw his
inaugural show at Miles McEnery.
Yep.
You saw that?
Oh, wait a minute. No, I did not see that.
He was at Pace, and he Pace, and he was at Miles McEnery, and it's always nice to see what somebody's up to when they have a new situation and new space, and so.
Yeah. Is that the space that Alex Ross had a show at?
Well, they have several spaces now, so I don't know. I'm not sure which one it was.
Because I saw Alex's show, but I did not see James' show. That's right. Yeah.
Also at Miles McEnery, Rico Gatson, an old Bushwick friend, and I'm not even sure if it's still up now. It might still be up. I have to look. But I've always loved Rico's work, so yeah. I do have a really nice catalog that they sent me, so I have that as a consolation prize. I hate to admit that I never saw the Jennifer Packer show at the Whitney.
I saw that. It was a good show.
Yeah, it was a good show. Everybody says so. Louise Bourgeois at the Met. Louise Bourgeois paintings at the Met. Yeah. That was on view in the summer.
Yeah, that was one I think I was conflicted about not seeing, although it didn't make it to the list.
Why were you conflicted?
Well, only because, I kind of wanted to see it, and I kind of didn't. Now, I know so much of her work. I'd seen so much of it. And did I want to see her paintings? I don't know. I've seen her paintings. And part of the thing, this is what I have against painters, by the way, Sharon, is that... They'll make some canvases, and they'll put it in a closet with no care whatsoever. It gets all crumpled up. And 50 years later, they hand it to a conservator, and it looks like it was painted yesterday. You know what I mean? No damage, no wrinkles. Perfect. And I've seen paintings like that by Louise, and I know they were not kept perfectly, and it's just amazing. It just doesn't happen like that with sculpture, unbelievable.
Well, I am curious. Barclay Hendricks is having a show coming up, and I wonder about his paintings from the 70s, how much conservation it took to get them to look so pristine.
Right, yeah.
All right, I have one more thing on the list here. All right, two more. Eva Hess at the Guggenheim. You saw it?
That was a good show, and that was interesting.
Speaking of conservation,
exactly.
Was there a lot of conservation?
Yeah. Her pieces are fragile. They change color. They flake, and there's there's a little video about that. And years ago at the Jewish Museum, they had a Eva Hess show, and the guy who was the resin master, that worked with her. Still had some of the original resin, and I think helped patch some pieces for that show or something. At least there was a video where he did a demo. But that was a piece aged dramatically, and they had to do some fixing to it. But it's interesting to see stuff like that, They once had a show about a failed restoration to Ad Reinhardt. Did you see that at the Guggenheim?
Yes.
Yeah, and it was almost like an
autopsy. No, I didn't. I saw the show of his retrospective.
Yeah, I think this was in the 90s. It was almost like an autopsy, because they dug into certain parts of it, and they showed how this was bad, because his pieces, you can't touch up, really. They're so fragile, the surfaces and stuff.
Right.
And so people did these repaintings that just didn't work out.
Right. But, with abstract painting, of course, most people wouldn't know.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, unless it's like a gash or something.
Right.
I remember The reason I know about the bourgeois restorations is because this guy who was a restorer had a space next to my studio. And so I saw that happening there. But he also was restoring a Robert Ryman, where a fork truck drove through a wall and stabbed, impaled the Ryman, you know. And I was there when Ryman came by, you know, to look at it. And it was like, yeah, close enough.
A casualist.
Yeah, it was okay.
All right, my final one is a show that was originally at the Mississippi Museum of Art in Jackson. And it's called A Movement in Every Direction, Legacies of the Great Migration. And it's contemporary artists, Zoe Charlton, Robert Pruitt, and others, respond, Theaster Gates, Turquoise Dyson, and Mark Bradford, responding to the Great Migration. You know, which of course was the period in which, you know, blacks left the South and moved north. And they have great materials online, or I have been using in teaching. And the good news is that I get another opportunity because it's going to be at the Baltimore Museum of Art until January 29th this year. So I might have another trip down to Baltimore. That's it. That's all I got. And of course, the ones that we both had, I've already mentioned those. Yes, this is Lori Fendrick, who's both a painter and arts writer and fiction writer.
Thanks for the latter. So I had a few thoughts. First of all, Sharon, I'll be blunt. I really at first thought, I don't want to go listen to this thing because it's like, you know, that whole thing, does a tree fall in the forest and can you hear it, the sound, if you're not there, et cetera. What does it mean? Right. So what does it mean to say that you're going to talk about shows you missed? And I, while you were talking, I found it all I was very interested in it. And there were some I had seen and some I hadn't seen. I'm personally very, very careful about what I see. I'm older. When I was young, I used to like tackle 30 galleries on a Saturday, forget it. So now I head out to see something, set out 5 galleries to go to, and that's it. I refuse to even be distracted. Because I run out of energy, and also I need to absorb. I'm a slow absorber. At any rate, I wanted to say a few things, a story you might enjoy. When my husband was writing for Art Forum when he was young, this guy, Phil Leader, wrote for Art Forum, and he wrote a review of a show in L.A., and he was caught out not having seen it, and the review was published in Art Forum. And so he responded. He said, I know the artist. I know the space. I can deduce the work. That's what he said. And it's like, that was long before the day of every gallery posting spectacular images on their website.
Right.
Which, of the whole show, of the whole entire show. Washburn publishes, posts every single image in really high resolution on their website. And, you know, it brings to the fore the whole question of what do you get when you see it in person that you're not getting in an age of spectacular digital representation? And, you know, it then starts to be, well, are you just nostalgic for the pre-digital age? Because, what do you get by seeing it in person? So I want to just go to that just for a second, and then I'll shut up. I did see the Philip Guston show in Boston in person. And I think seeing it in person was really important. In fact, Sharon, you may not remember, but I wrote a piece on it for Two Coats of Paint.
Yes, that's right.
Yes, I did. That's right. I did. I know you see so much and know so much, my young, dear friend, but I did that you would might maybe forget it. But one of the reactions I had to the Boston show was that, you know, it was very controversial. That's got to be remembered, what happened, because the show had been canceled in Washington because of a protest, really. I don't want to go into the whole details, but there had been a protest about the fact that it had all this, imagery of the Ku Klux Klan that might be triggering very bad feelings for an audience that would come see it and not know about Guston's feeling about the Klan and his own, you know, experience with the Klan when he was young. So it was canceled at the in Washington, and there was a lot of people fell on either side of the debate. A lot of minority artists said this should not have been canceled, and others said yes, it should have. So the net result is that every venue that now is taking it is putting on their own show. So what's going on in Boston is different from what will go on at the Tate when in their representation of it, and et cetera. So I found the Boston show bordered on being didactic and insulting to Gustin. Now, it stayed shy of it. And when I wrote, not wanting to be, I wasn't completely sure of my feelings, I tried to be diplomatic about it and say they just get to the edge of that. But, you know, you're looking at a man's work of art who he was a passionate, dedicated artist who went through a couple of different styles. And you're looking at it with these big didactic wall things next to the work explaining to you that, you know, this painting, you know, blah, 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 and exit things in case you faint and can't handle the imagery. I thought was, you know, aside from the fact that I don't think many people can handle the imagery, they see a lot worse when they just hang out on Grindr or wherever they go. You know, most people, young people, can definitely handle the imagery. And one piece of good didactic material as you enter the show would have done the trick. But to keep posting it in the galleries and have exit things was like, it was just maligning Gustin as if he had somehow been, you know, endorsing the Klan. And it was preposterous. So I think those things were shown by going to the show. I didn't realize it till I went to the show that that's what had happened. So in that, that's an extreme example of where you really, it's not an aesthetic example, but where seeing the show really mattered.
Yeah. Well, also the controversial thing, I don't know, I didn't see the show. The thing that was controversial in his during his life was his switch to that kind of imagery. I don't know how much the show talked about that, but you know, in the 70s, early 70s in New York, when he switched to that kind of painting, it seemed almost dramatically, a dramatic switch, and it really divided artists, not in terms of the imagery so much, but I think it was that he was doing this cartoony style. He went from a pure abstraction to this cartoony style, and that, I remember when I first went to New York, so some painters didn't take him seriously because of that. Of course, the younger painters jumped all over it. They loved it. Yeah.
Well, de Kooning loved it too. De Kooning, right. I think that issue was a lot of the abstract painters saying, you abandoned us.
Right.
Not so much the cartoony style as you abandoned us. We have this commitment to this kind of painting and you left us. But de Kooning basically said, of course, de Kooning was painting imagery too that was recognizable in his women's series. But de Kooning said, hey, you know, it's great. You know, do what you want.
I want to take a little break here to give a brief shout out to Kootza Paint sponsors conversation. You can raise your hand and we'll call on you after the little break. I'd like to thank the Painting Center. Support the organization through purchasing art. The Painting Center benefit 2022 to 2023 is on view through January 25th on Artsy. Also, I want to say that I would like each of you to encourage your galleries, nonprofit organizations, art programs, and universities to advertise on Two Coats of Paint this year. For info, send an email to twocoatsofpaint@gmail.com with advertising in the subject line. And I want to also thank all of the readers and listeners who contributed to our year-end fundraising campaign. Thank you so much. In case you're just entering the room, this is a Two Coats of Paint conversation hosted by Peter Dudek about the art exhibitions we missed this year. Peter.
And I'm still here, yes.
Yes, let's see if Catherine has anything to add. Hi, Catherine. This is Catherine.
Hello.
Catherine.
Hi.
Who is a painter, and you have a show up right now in Dallas, do you not?
It just came down.
Okay.
Just came down.
So we didn't see it.
Yeah, so I thought you could just dedicate the rest of the show to discussing the show you didn't see that was mine. Would that be too much to ask? I didn't think that I had anything to contribute because I was forced into this strange science experiment in 2022 where, because of an unforeseen illness, I did not see anything in person, almost literally nothing. And I saw everything as a digital experience. I had no choice. Because of COVID, the treatment left me immune compromised anyway. And things are getting better, and I'm hoping to correct all of that in 2023. But you know, there was a certain amount of guilt or, I don't know, anxiety that I sensed both you and Peter discussing what you didn't see. Maybe I'm overanalyzing, but I was spared like all of that because I literally couldn't go see anything. My doctor said, no, you really can't go out there. So it was very odd. But after Lori shared her experience, I thought, you know, maybe I do have something to offer. What do you get? What do you gain from seeing something in person? The Gustin example was really interesting as a sort of a negative thing. And oh yeah, don't get me started on those plaques. I completely agree with everything you said in general. But I had this, again, this experiment foisted upon me where all of my experience was digital and teaching that way too, of course. It's so different and so odd. And yes, you know, painting, sculpture, tactile, handmade things, seeing them in person in real space, you kind of don't realize how important it is until you can't do it, maybe. And I yearn for that experience again. But on the other hand, the institutional experience of how things are packaged and caged and apologized for these days, I can do without some of that. So the online, the intimacy of looking at high quality, you know, digital images, like in your bed, of course, you know, you pretty much do everything in bed these days, is really, it's not fraught with any of that external stimulation or packaging or setup. So it can be really beautiful too, but I would not wish this extreme on anyone. So everybody get out there in 2023 because I sure am going to.
Well, yeah, that is interesting. The online, the surfing through, and discovering very casually. I discovered shows I had not seen. You know. I wasn't aware of even certain shows at the Met. It was really stunning. But then I had students see them online, these past shows, and that turned out very interesting.
I relied quite a bit on the materials at the on the websites for teaching online, and some of them just have amazing materials, you know, videos with the curators and all of these things that they never used to do before COVID.
Yeah, the videos were very, the panel discussions they would have. Sometimes they'd be short, sometimes they'd be long, but they were very informative, especially for, you know, for the students. Yeah. Is there anybody else listening that want to raise their hand and comment on a show that they did not see? You have to have not seen it.
I can't believe everybody saw the shows that they wanted to see.
I'm telling you, everyone is too guilty. There's an incredible amount of guilt for not seeing things, right?
Yes, but now we're going to have guilt for not mentioning the shows that we wish we'd seen.
It's a never-ending spiral of doom.
Exactly. Oh, here's Louise.
Can you hear me?
Yes, welcome. This is Louise Belcourt, who is a painter. Tell us what you didn't see.
Well, I missed the first five minutes of this because I had to figure out how to download this app. So you probably all mentioned this show, but it was the Matisse Red Studio show at MoMA. Did you guys see that?
Anyway, yes, we saw that.
You all mentioned it. Yeah, I didn't see it. That's like a killer that I didn't see it. And I think about it almost every week that I didn't see it. And it was because I was building a studio and I didn't do anything at all. And that was all about his studio that he built. So I went online and I saw what I could, dimensions and angles of windows and all the stuff that I've been dealing with. And of course, mine is like super modest and his is super fantastic. So I just felt terrible, you know, building and sweating and bleeding money to make something that's vastly inferior. But anyway, I would love to have seen that show.
Well, you know, we did actually have a conversation about building studios that was inspired when I saw that show, because he had the plans for the studio. And I had known so many people who were at the time building studios, you know, due to, you know, having moved out of town during pandemic.
Yeah. He had a beautiful studio, big 30, I think it was 30 feet by 30 feet by 12 feet high, with a huge window on the north side that bent into the ceiling. Yeah, just perfect. So I wish I saw that show, but I'll, you know, the work in it too, of course. I mean, I love Matisse, but just from a greedy, selfish point of view, I would like to have seen the structure.
There's a Matisse show coming up at the Philly Museum. I might go to Philly for that, and there's something at the Barnes Foundation also I want to see.
Oh.
A Mondigliani show, in addition to the Barnes itself. The Matisse show is, I think, paintings from the 30s. But I want to, you know, I have a category of missed but still up. I actually saw this show, but it's still up for others who perhaps missed it. And that's the Mira Oppenheim show at the Modern. I don't know if there's people out there who missed it, but it was interesting for two reasons. First of all, I hardly knew her work other than the famous stuff, you know, the Fur-Lined Teacup and stuff like that. But she had early work that was before art school, that was proto-surrealist sketches that were interesting. And then she went to art school later and she produced a whole bunch more stuff that was surrealist. So there's a lot of work in that show you one has never seen. But I saw it. So I don't know if that qualifies.
I didn't see it, so it qualifies. I did not see it. And everybody's posting about it, and I feel I should go see it. But all I can think of is that Fur-Lined Teacup, and I think, do I really have to see that? But now you're saying I do, so.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Like I say, especially when you can contrast the early work to what she did later. But it's a big show, much bigger than I thought it would be. The you know, of course, I want to comment on the fact that I suggested the Barbara Kruger image for the posting on about this talk, because once you're at the museum, you can't not see it. it's so
it's
gigantic.
It's true. You have to walk through that area if you're going to take the stairs. I saw it. That's right. I saw it when I went to see the Wolfgang Tillman show.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Actually, I saw it twice.
It shouted at me, and I hurried in the other direction.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I saw her show at, I think it was Werner, and I thought that was interesting, the way she restructured some of her pieces. But then this piece was like bombastic. It's unbelievable. Sharon, is there any other
show? I see Franklin. Franklin's here. I thought you were going to invite Franklin. Hi, Franklin. It's Franklin Einsbruch, who is also a painter and arts writer.
Hi. How are you doing, Sharon?
Good. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year to all y'all.
Thank you.
Just to jump in on what Peter was saying, I did see the Matisse show. I ended up writing about that, and it's good. And I hope it's still up.
The one in Philly?
Yeah, the Philly Matisse show was really strong. They had a beautiful layout on that show. It was nice and open. It had a good sampling of works, but it was still like nice and focused because it was just, I mean, ostensibly a one decade show, although they lit in a few more things, maybe about 13 years worth of material. And it was a narrative about how he had gotten into a rut and got himself out of it by virtue of getting this painting commission at the Barnes.
Huh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so you can kind of see him working his way out of this very successful, both aesthetically and commercially, series of paintings of nudes done in the studio in Nice. And I guess even like a lot of the modern art world was starting to write him off because he had become so well known for these little easel-sized nudes that he was painting. And then this commission arrived from the Barnes and he went to go check that out. And it made him rethink a lot of the decorative sources of his fauvism. And he ended up capitalizing that on a way that he probably wouldn't have if he had not received that commission. So very interesting show, very beautiful show, and very much worth seeing if it is indeed still up. I didn't look up to see if it was. And the Modigliani show is excellent. It was, I've seen it. I saw the Modigliani show that was at the Jewish Museum.
Yeah.
And that was, it was full of drawings. This had no drawings. It had a lot of sculptures. This only had a few sculptures. So it was a really painting-specific show, including and really built around the nude that they have in the Barnes itself. And that was also very intelligently installed and quite respectful and beautifully hung. The catalog is possibly the most detailed analysis of any painting I've ever seen. It just goes on and on and on about like the weave of this canvas has been genetically linked to this other painting over here that was done at the same time. It was like that level of old school art historical analysis and materials nerdery. I think a lot of the public would not be even slightly interested in, but I thought it was really cool. And I'm pretty sure the Modigliani show is up. I actually wrote about the Modi show too for a Philadelphia print magazine called Root Quarterly, which is time.
What did you not see though?
So I did not see.
This is about things you didn't see.
This is about,
supposed to be making us feel bad about even more.
you're up in New Hampshire.
You still have time to redeem yourself regarding Philadelphia, but what we will never be able to redeem ourselves for, at least me personally, was the Brett Baker show at Elizabeth Harris. I really wanted to see the Brett Baker show at Elizabeth Harris. He is a magnificent painter. He's a super nice guy. He is the proprietor of Painter's Table, which I don't know if it's quite as active as it used to be, but that was doing a lot of interesting showcasing of painting coverage. And
I saw his show.
How was it?
Well, you know, he's trying to work at a larger scale, which is
some of these are like 90-inch canvases I saw on there.
Because his earlier work was so small. It was like the size of a file card. I mean, right. A little bigger than that, maybe a double file card. But the new work is getting bigger, but the mark is staying the same size, you know, the same brush width.
They're much more complex paintings now by virtue of
they're more complex, and apparently they're based on the view out his picture window in his living room. He lives down in I want to say North Carolina.
That's right.
Out of the view in his window, so there's like you know sort of the illusion of light, but in a geometric grid-like form. But these paintings seem to have some sort of coating, as if he varnished them, which seemed new. Maybe it was the lighting, but it looked like they had some sort of sheen that his earlier work didn't have.
That
what else did you not see?
What else didn't I see? Well, most of what happened.
I'd like to get back to what Laurie said about how much wood can a woodchuck chuck? I mean, how many shows can a working artist in their studio just trying to get by, like how many shows can you possibly take in and how many should you take in and what were the shows that Matisse didn't see and how often did Matisse leave his studio and rush out to see other shows? And you know, I'm just wondering if we're just getting a little out of control here, perhaps.
Well, we certainly are out of control. There's no question about that. But the because, you know, when I first came to New York, it was in the mid-70s, so I could see every show in New York casually, you know, because I went out twice a week. I was a student. And I'd go downtown, you know, one day, and then uptown the other day, et cetera, like that. And it wasn't difficult to see everything. But I've taken on the approach that Laurie has. I have five shows. Five shows I go see, and that's it. Because I can remember the shows I see. And if you see five shows a week, what's that? 10, 20 a month, 10 months, there's 200 shows. That's enough shows, you know. And in Painter's Painting, the documentary that Neil D'Antoni did, Philip Pavia, I think, was talking, and he said that at the time, in the 50s, it was a very small art world. It was almost like a crude social construct.
Wait, Catherine, can you mute yourself? Can you mute? I think there's some miscellaneous there. Thanks.
Yeah. So the art world was even smaller in the 50s, and the 60s exponentially, the 70s again, it keeps on growing, and it's out of control. You know, Picasso apparently said that he didn't have to travel because he saw everything in Paris, you know, whatever. But certainly there wasn't that much in Paris at the time. So we are overdoing it. There's no question about it. And plus, after seeing 200 shows, my students still saw shows I did not see, and that was too much to deal with.
I love that documentary. I'm so glad that you mentioned it. I just watched it again recently. Every single one of them is chain smoking the whole time.
Or drinking.
And like cigarettes. Yeah. And no, I'm not sure about the drinking part, but the smoking part is amazing. And like every cliche of the great genius, you know, mm-hmm. artists, like they got these really cool kind of beat up chairs and there's ashtrays everywhere and they're always smoking. Mm-hmm. But Barnett Newman always comes across the best as like the most, the most smoking and the most intellectualizing. It's right. Such a great documentary.
Yeah. It's long, but good. Yeah.
Do we have anyone else who wants to come up for a final mention of any shows they might want to see? I see Patrick has joined. Patrick, there must be shows that you wish you'd seen that you didn't see. Patrick Neal is a painter and also contributor to Two Coats of Paint. Maybe he'll come up. Hi, Patrick.
I've much just wanted to add to what Laurie was saying, that I, too, used to go get those 30 shows. And I've even read something about how... I forget who. I'm going to be sorry that I can't think of this. But somebody said that not only should Greenberg's eye be praised, but his feet should be praised as well for going around and seeing so many shows. And I thought that was a very nice comment. But even so, that I'm a lot happier going to see like 8 shows and not 25. That just doesn't do it for me anymore.
Well, can I add one thing too, Sharon? Are you
yes.
there?
Yes, I was. Yeah, muted,
I just wanted to add,
and then Patrick.
Okay, I want to quickly say. You know, I was friends with Irving Sandler for many years. I liked him and respected him very much, but he saw everything too. I mean, he saw everything. And one thing he said to me once was, well, he said, I'm not sure how good it is for artists to see everything. And that was an interesting comment and it kind of stuck with me because I'm not sure that you have to see everything. But
yeah,
I do think carefully selecting
informed.
Stuff. That makes
I didn't mean to talk over you there. I think you can absolutely be too informed as an artist. Like you can just have stuff in your head that's taking up space and not helping you in the studio. I think that's entirely possible.
Hi, Patrick. Did you have something you want to contribute?
Can you hear me?
Yes, you're on.
Oh, great. thanks for calling me up. I just tuned in late. I was just thinking during the. Now that people are going out again and how we live in New York City, many of us that I don't want to forget how great a treasure trove this city is. And like, I just feel like personally that it's going out, going to openings and going to museums and galleries is something I want to do much more of. Two things that I saw, you probably talked about the Richard Crusade Dart, which was incredibly popular. And then these are shows that I did see, Pat Steer, who's somebody I love, but a show in the show at the Phillips Collection of Jennifer Bartlett and Bonnard called In and Out of the Garden was a show I really wish I had seen. sometimes I buy a catalog of an art exhibition and start reading it and thinking, I really wish I had gotten to that, but that's a show that is something I'm really thinking about now in my studio as I make my own art.
Thanks, Patrick. I can totally see that how it relates to your work.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think new image painting in general is something that I've been thinking a lot about. And I'm reading Irving Sandler's Art of the Postmodern Era and kind of going through it. For some reason, I've just picked up this huge book and for like retracing. You know, something I've been thinking about too is, are there any good books on art since, you know, of this millennia, you know, going back to 2000 up to now in terms of art history, like, you know, like a kind of big all encompassing thing, because there was one book I found, but I feel like often a lot of these books on landscape painting now or painting now often are lists. They're more like lists and categories rather than, kind of like a discussion of like some of the ideas that are in the air. I don't know. So I was just thinking about maybe what are being taught in our history class and now for the past 30 years.
Clearly you have to write it.
Yeah.
I just want to mention that I checked and the two shows in Philadelphia at the Barnes and at the Philly Museum are both up till the 29th. They both end at the 29th. So I have to run down before the end of the month. See those two.
All right. Well, Peter, thanks for hosting today. And thanks to everyone who listened and joined in.
Yeah, it was fun. I have to think of something else I haven't done to have a clubhouse about.
I like the books idea that Patrick...
Yeah, the books I've never read. There's quite a few of those.
Yeah. They're making me laugh. Thank you very much for this. It's a very nice way to... I've been painting to it, so it's like very nice to paint to this conversation.
Well, that's my goal with Clubhouse, is to create content for people to listen to while they're in the studio.
It works.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, everyone. Well, thanks. If you want to hear the conversation again, it's going to be available in podcast format later today on most of the podcast apps, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and so forth. I guess that's it. We'll see you next time.
Very good. Thank you.
Bye. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. See you around.
See you around.
This has been a Two Coats of Paint podcast.